out in the corner there, come in the corner here, there's more room. And that way the people who come late can stand in that corner. This is the fourth in a series of four readings sponsored by the Academic Committee. I can't tell you what we're going to have next semester because so far there's no Academic Committee. So if anybody has any causes they'd like to bring out, the Academic Committee will be soliciting people in the fall, and you can just bring just about any person you want to the campus. Tonight we have William H. Gass, who is a professor of philosophy but isn't teaching this semester, is on sabbatical. And I'm going to let him speak for himself since I couldn't think of anything to say.
Thank you very much. I will try to, I know the acoustics are poor in this room, having sat here many times in your place, and I will try to project, and if I start failing to do so, if you'll just start raising your hands and I'll try to raise my voice. Plato used to frequently say in the midst of these long monologues that he disguised as dialogues, that from time to time he would say, let us stand and take breath, and while we are resting, let us reckon up between ourselves what has been done. What I suggest we do about three-fifths of the way through this reading is take a break and stand and take breath, and by that time we'll probably all be in dire need of it, and those who wish to take that opportunity to silently steal away may, and it's going to be probably very hot in here by that time anyhow. Tonight I want to read to you a chapter from a novel in progress, which has been in progress for so long that it's no longer describable as being in progress. This is called The Tunnel, the novel. It is about a 50-ish professor of history who teaches in an unnamed university in the Midwest. Not here, of course. His name is William Frederick Kohler. His specialty is the history of the Third Reich. He has a wife called Martha, or Marty, a student who in this particular piece he is seducing named Ruth or Rue, and a colleague whom he refers to frequently, never favorably, called Culp. And I think these are the only names that might help you when first introduced. I chose this particular section because, to my amazement, I've written something that I think proves to be a little timely. Secondly, it might have a little more interest for you because it's about, in part, the relations between faculty and students. You will observe, and this is the last thing I want to say about it by getting on, is that since this is a section from a longer piece, and the way I work is to take all the themes and work with them at all times, but to bring some themes of the total work into more prominence than others at a particular time. And in this section, the prominent theme is the schoolroom, if you like. But of course, all the other themes will be lapping about the embankment. This section is called The Cost of Everything. The river is crowded with army water now, olive drab to khaki because of the clay it carries. On Gibraltar, they trap water the way you net fish, with great catch basins held out to the heavens like a beggar's hat. The river has a heavy burden, immense. It does not move. It endlessly journeys. The roads are sticky, too, and often washed out, their beds the color of graham cracker. Buses are forbidden to try them, and the local schools close. Children, tell me about history. Any day, I think, the blackbirds will return. The garden mud is as dark in the clod as they are sooty on the willow. Marty thinks not. There's always a wind which follows the river like another river. Yes, correct. It is strong. You may lean a long way into it, yet it will hold you. Life rises with the river. The Nile is an excellent example. The will rises. Sap. Let me see. Can anyone think of another? Tell me about the stillness of glass, the perfection of imprisoned images, the determination with which flooded fields hold their breath beneath the water. The mercury rises. I guess we have to accept that. It's as though a tap's been turned. Body spills from body the way water overflows a tub. Even the trees seem taller, wider. Why? With their bark wet and their feet free of snow. It's March for Marty, too. Her flesh fills the house, water and air. It's difficult to touch a table or a chair without indecently feeling her knee or finding your fingers invited to sink between her soft thighs as though through lemon pudding. Twigs click against the bedroom windows. How? Suggestively. And how is that? Like summer beetles. And Marty's throat begins to hum. She's a bee. The spring floods force us away from the river, force us up to the highway which flats the bluffs, and there the wind is said to be so strong it blows the road dry during rains. I appreciate that answer. Thank you. On my blackboard the other day, with precariously propped up strokes, like toothpicks, it was pretended that my pupils printed. There was a professor of history who explained to his class every misery of our human state. War was man's fate. But why this was so was a mystery. They printed so I wouldn't recognize the handwriting, but it's Culp, my colleague. He of hatchet jaw, black eye, of military hair and flanged nose, the enemy of poetry, swarthy as a muscle man, who is their muse. Culp makes noises in his throat like a saw. Culp is the name of an injury. You'd never believe, to look at it now, that the river could become transparent, run thinly over stones and between bars of white sand like a creek, that there was life in the water, or that you could ever see a minnow's flank ignited by the sun, or a blue heron wet his feet. But by the end of summer, the Wabash has bled so long it's lost its function. Which is to be? A swamp in some places, scummy with detergent, a drainage ditch in others, a sluice for every sort of chemical in the shit of 30 towns and 20 cities, a crack between buttocks. Yet in the stretch which I discovered for myself, it is a stream split in the middle by a white island of sand, sweetly eyed like a daisy, with willows already yellow, and surrounded by yellow rattling aspens, loud yellow cottonwoods, and sycamores which line and lean brilliantly over its banks in decorative ranks like silver soldiers. It was, in fact, something I should have known at once, in the center of a bulldozed track made by laying down a pipeline. Gas or oil? I'm afraid I don't know. And the action of the machines at this time had this strangely beautiful result, which was a sandy island and an area once barren where the weeds were now returning one by one in nicely separated clumps like specimen plants competing for prizes. And I gave them prizes. What? Loving observation day by day through a long fall, when as they went to seed, they let their sexual cries out through their leaves. Which leads me to make this interesting observation, that despite its poor press and the propaganda of statistics, mass bombing may not be such a bad idea. We shall debate the matter tomorrow, children, shall we? Would that be fun? Among ourselves. I have often thought since the following. That you never can tell. The Wabash seemed as run down as the railway, and I had frequently gone to its edge like a thirsty dog to make love, adulteries only the sky saw or concerned the crushed grass in any detail. Originally, the river had grown across the country like a vine. its tangled branches blundering into one hillside after another. Now, all of these dead ends were dry, their banks spread out with prickly weeds and poison ivy. No wonder the water had shrunk from them, and covered with swarms of gnats, the way clouds collect and hang along the coast. As well by? Ants and other insects, for example. Flies, mosquitoes, various bees, and ticks, slugs, spiders, caterpillars, butterflies as blue as dusk, or those like yellow petals loose in a breeze, paper torn up, the last love letter. Yes, but do get on. Yes, ma'am. You really must try to remember that during these recitativos, the class cannot afford the time to float along leaf-like on your digressions, or lie becalmed in one of your eternal hesitations. Yes, ma'am. I notice that it's there the scum collects, twigs tangle, and dead insects rest legs up in rows like higher boats, so do get on. Yes, ma'am. Now then, for example, crickets, chiggers, I said spiders, didn't I? Yes. The pepper and paprika spiders, for instance, and ladybugs shiny as plastic. Those nondescript brown nobodies, or creatures with orange dots on their backs and fat yellow and hairy black spiders in glistening nets like costume jewelry. Daddy long legs, katydids green, with the sour freshness of limes. And centipedes so flat they must have grown up stepped on. I mentioned spiders. Clicking beetles, the bees we've been through, haven't we? Yes. Anonymous yellow and red, black and brown bugs, spiders, skinny green worms, sweat bees, yellow jackets, hornets, bumbles, and flies, of course, of the commonest kind, the sort with metal green noses and yellow eyes, and the really huge dark gray ones with wings like pale gray mustaches, which always made me think of gray rats skulking about the sky as if it were enclosing a sewer. Oh, and there were crabs, you know, and fleas, insects so transparent you could see their insides tick like clocks in glass cases. On the heads of the gray flies, two dots, the color of fresh blood. Lace bugs, pinch bugs, cinch bugs, mayflies, and so on, moths as soft as blanket fuzz, and damp white grubs in all the sizes. Where? In stumps, and under rocks and leaves and rotting trunks, the albinos of each species. Flying ants and termites, caterpillars of the most fanciful sort, spiders, roaches in every range, katydids, green, a green to cool gin, and cicadas and such caterpillars as cannot be imagined. You may, A, return to your desk, B, go back to your bench, C, sit down in your chair, D, take your seat. Do not choose just one. Great washes of timber and flood rubble lay in gray confusion everywhere, clogging the dry streams, though crossing the bottoms where they were still wet was like wading through pumpkin pie. Yet there, in the midst of a score of rivulets like stiff mop strings, I discovered it. The sand, the circuiting, yattering yellow trees, the graceful arch and delicate shading of the willows, the clear, child-sliding water, the privacy and silence of the dragonfly, pale mauve, copper green, electric blue, a heron, silent as an angler, and the water strider, silent too, the fish like silver bubbles in the water, those butterflies like ghostly tatters, discreet gray birds, my lustful reeds. And I had in my hand at the time, as luck would have it, a pleasantly porky but certainly mixed up little girl from my morning class, whom I was trying to teach. To this lewd old professor of history, our life has a spermy trajectory. We fish for a mate, but ourselves eat the bait, though why we do so is a mystery. Teach what? To swallow it. But who never learned? She couldn't handle the Habsburgs any better. Dynasties did her in, the Umayyad or Seleucid kings, kissing cousins, blood-sick dukes, pocket duchies, geologic ages, eras, Egypt. Though small bandage for such a wound, a sour salve and salty beside. The news was sufficient consolation later. On the other hand, my wife is a master of genealogical botany. She can take a tree in at a glance. She could take in the whole forest if each tree were a twig on some giant branch. She knows the presidents by heart and, of course, the kings of England, Scotland, and of France. Intermarriage is her métier. Families may clasp like the pledging hands of athletes about to take the field. Still, she will trace each finger wiggle in an instant to its owner. Begettings of any kind, seedings, she sees spread out in their forking lines like cracks in glass or sentences diagrammed, as we once did so painfully in English class. Her skill is due partly to her sense of subservience and descent, of pecking orders applied to time. 8 a.m. may peck 9, but the privilege is asymmetrical. An understanding that is not distracted by any other model, but has one principle of organization, the ever-burgeoning family. My wife loves to speak like a southerner of her connections. But little round Rue, my pupil, wished to run from her parents as I ran from mine, and hated families as I hate them, and had no head for lineal derivations. Really, when I consider the melting earth, the sog in my shoe tops, my splayed prints, I do think the blackbirds may be back any day. Marty won't disagree. She wouldn't dare. She will simply, after arching her eyebrows, yes, class, consider. What simply, after arching her eyebrows, will Martha do? None of her expressions is any more original than the arch. The Romans invented. The Greeks knew only post and beam. Their marble columns mimic trees, backs, thighs, arms. She finds hers on the faces she finds flattened in her magazines. And she tries them on the way I try on trousers. Which way is that? One after another through the whole stack. And Roman aqueducts were capable of carrying water over canyons. In England, there is one of cast iron, a canal coasts over. In Lisbon, lovely. And Segovia, near Nimes. I have seen her hold both face and photo to her mirror so the mask and its model were mirrored there a moment just like twins, glass sisters more than friends, before they disappeared in one another like uniting rivers. They were built to last like the Model T, the aqueducts. Last longer than veins. The Alhambra, too, has splendid plumbing. It wasn't that the caliphs wanted so abundantly to be clean. They knew what water was, the Arabs. They desired it all around them, fountaining, reflecting, soothing, cooling, softening, contriving green. And since her magazines are mostly devoted now to gardening, elegant homes and their tasteful decoration, as well as the elegant and tasteful entertainments which can be handed round in them like sensitive silver dishes on shining silver trays. Culp confounds me every day. No wonder I seek the seashore when I can, bury my head in sunny air, let only the surf smoke in my mouth. There was a professor of history who explained to his class every misery of our human state. 1. War is man's fate. 2. Hate pays for hate. 3. All help comes too late. 4. Our lives don't relate. But why this is so stays a mystery. In short, to what? I am a full, quite full, professor, and have sold a book about the Jews. Consequently, my income has gone up, and as it has, Marty's taste in magazines has altered, risen, hasn't everything, and the expressions on her faces, manicured, expensive, suburban, French. In short, to what? In short, to cultivation. Each flower, yard, each garden, bathroom, family, friend, each alert glass vase, to be plowed and planted, scrubbed and painted, raised and arranged, according to the latest in what is best for them. Have you anything further to add to your account at this time? Yes, that's how I always put it, unbarreling my pen. If not, then sign your deposition here on this line where I've put my X. And do you have anything further to add to your account at this time? Yes. Yes. Since the photos which appear in the pages of these dirty Jewish journals are designed like funhouse glass to reflect only wholesome spirits, eager, ardent Aryans, and their wholesome attitudes. Herr Kohler, these photos are designed to hide their dark, diseased, oily skins, their hairy, hooked noses, their kinky, woolover, niggerish heads, their moist, lascivious eyes. In these malicious magazines, even your cock, as you look, seems no longer circumcised. Well, since Mrs. Kohler buys only ready-mades, her wardrobe of responses, though she has more of passion's poses hanging on the varnished wooden hangers which comprise her than the children have costumes for Halloween, is consequently limited, and its character frequently rather special. Indeed. Her fur is pinned on like a paper doll's. You don't say. My penis enters like a crayon, coloring between the lines. My word. Oh, yes, my wife is everywhere wondered at for her unfailingly happy and radiant nature. Which is the result of? Has to do with... The sycamores have a radiant nature. Greek columns have a radiant nature. Fulsome fountains, spires of spray. Gleaming trunks do, polished limbs. I certainly receive no credit for it. Why should I? With a smile like a flat tire rolling off its rim. And I'm thought to be extraordinarily lucky. You've a wonderful woman there, Bill Boy. A wonderful lady laddie, what a lay. To bask in such unbroken sunshine, even though I do seem perpetually pale, with that bad smile like the teeth of refugees on hunger posters. I should go to the seashore for my health, sleep on a wave, stay in the sun till I look like sand. The reason? Because I spend so much time, my heart hurts, I've holes in my lungs, my pee steams, on those grim German things, that Neolithic Nazi nonsense. My ears ring, my joints ache, my skin grows bruises like grass. Cast away on the gray knockers of my wife. And what is a woman for if not to be the sun, the sea, and the seashore? Crossing in the iron aqueduct, you feel afloat on the palm like a tray of a waiter. Water and air are the same. Like a slice of lemon, lily padding in a teacup, don't look down. Though the Greeks discovered, the Romans constructed. I helped draw up the dossier. I questioned people, gathered documents, I took statements. Cleverly, I collected incriminations, just as I do now, by appearing sympathetic, a little inclined in the same direction, with a bit of brown shirt bent or bias. Oh, I led them on from insinuation to denunciation, or I got them in confidential moods to go too far, as the case may have required, and show themselves for what they were, or worse, for what they wanted to become, or like to dream they'd been. They considered me one of the nurses of Nuremberg, later a lawyer, when all the while I was a hanging his honor, an historian. And what is a teacher for, if not to be accuser, counsel, courtroom, jury, yellow gutter, journalist, frontier judge? I'm thought to be somewhat ungrateful, too. Bill Boy, I hope you appreciate what a marvel your Martha is, such a fine and well-connected family with such hips. Please understand that I wouldn't blame you a bit if you were, but are you ungrateful? Yes. She's sly. She hands me her hatred done up like a fruitcake soaked 6 months in sherry. Countless raisins, nuts, and candied cherries. And you accept that? She knows I like the wine. She sugars her scorn like cereal and butters her spite like a bun. Her spit is thin cream. She shits jam. Why? Because everything she knows, says, or does is a gift. She posts her body to me like a bomb for Christmas, flesh wrapped in flesh to make me eager, bones wadded with fat to muffle the tick. In his youth, Napoleon was a whiz at what? Math. Usually she appears to be standing in an open colonial doorway, and she is graciously about to greet guests. Or, crisply aproned, spoon in hand, she is gazing rapturously at you from beside her fridge. Or she is resting her plump butt on the bumper of a Buick sedan. When I was a boy, the kids called me Billy Balls. How weary by nightfall her bras must be. Her come-hither gaze is notorious and has been copied from an image advertising some radical new food for the face, a substance found, I think she said, in frogs, or stolen, was it, from the turtles, or ground up out of buzz-exhausted bees. Like a slow lantern show, her expressions change. And the sight of her Buick look being beamed up at you from between welcoming knees can turn the stiffest prick to string. She's off to shop. The price of everything, the cost. I hear the door slam. Thunk. I think, oh. Why? Because Culp is a criminal, and his criminality is catching. He straws his teeth with a stiff weed. He walks like a squeaky coaster wagon. He tells a tiresome story in tinny Chinese. Zzz, he says the zipper goes. I am amazed. He mimes his noises, too. Kirkachu. He puffs, bends, and trembles. Kirkachu. I've never heard in all his sounds a single original tone, the bassoons, for instance, or the steady low strum of an electric clock. Night and day, his mouth motors as if we were all roads he was driving over, and his teeth, his cheeks, his nose, they motor too. Arua, 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 arua! Sexually, he's stuck in the '20s. This girl swings in, he says, zazuzaz, he says, while his notions of violence, chase, and pursuit come straight from the early cartoons. The rest of his repertoire is the common property of childhood, machine guns, bombing planes, and death rattles. The way he grows them, Culp boasts, radishes pop from the ground the moment the seeds go in, and his thumb springs from his fist like someone shooting marbles. Why, when you were a boy, did your boyfriends call you Billy Balls? No reason, for no reason. I appreciate that answer. Thank you. I can close my eyes and these books become their faces. The words I write fill my mouth as though I were speaking or eating them. Which? I always find that my imagination moves me easily from prison to prison. Study, office, class, bath, bedroom, swivel chair or toilet stool. There is an indiscernible difference. But when I would draw the snow back like a curtain and look out upon my island and my sand again, dreaming of sunshine like someone lonely waiting at a window, or when I would wear your hair so close to me it might indeed be mine, well, I ash the manuscript instead. Nerves, nerves again, nerves, nerves, and my thumb jumps. There's no passage. No exit from this chair. My cough is a classroom interruption. That dark branch in the window there, the bone of a questioner's arm. My pictures are confinements. Rue's wild eyes when she left me, the curse she gave me like a bite on the shoulder. Still, I should not complain. I had an island once. Lay naked as a walrus on it. Who can say so much? And it was in the middle of this shoreless land, too, where we know water as a rule only in terms of flooded gutters or meadows as wet to their rims as saucers. I cannot complain. Yet I do. I do. The problems of my profession circle the appropriate responses. 1. Jollying Jews. 2. Coping with Culp. 3. Never minding Nazis. 4. Husbanding Martha and harnessing history. 5. Glorifying Goys. 6. Seducing my students. 7. Counting the cost. 8. putting up with philanthropy. Rue would either let my prick slip away at the first sign of its summiting, so it was suddenly a falling man, without support or sensation, and my sperm spilled like a series of screams across her chin and down her neck, or flew like salt thrown over her shoulder. Or she would sit there a moment with pouched, surprised cheeks, before opening her mouth and pushing the spunk into her palms as you might sweep out a store after hours. Then, of course, she had slimy hands, and she would sit on the grass with her skirt carefully arranged around her and hold them out like cup and pencils, pleading for a wife. I don't want you to think you haven't got the dearest doodle. How it used to anger me to see it spit so futilely, but a good instructor should never lose patience. And I was a good instructor. It was my pupil who was punk. That was a splendid try. You are improving. Am I? Am I really? I don't understand Austria at all. What is putsch? I rose as the sea rose. Few do, my dear. Tides rise. Correct. There is an ebb and flow. I'm having a terrible time with the Habsburgs, she said, her hair looping over her face in long, untidy lengths, the way some bushes turn their branches into tents, the trunks then skulk in. What is coup? She hid her eyes behind that flop of hair, or behind dark glasses of various tints, or otherwise she simply closed the lids. City jewelries guard themselves with mesh. I'm having a horrible time. She had a raincoat wrapped around her and colliding toes, which meant that beneath all the muffle, her knees met and her fat thighs kissed. I never got them to part, though I tried. From time to time I felt obliged to make some gesture in that direction, as if to acknowledge she was a woman. She didn't mind. Her fingertips were clean because she bit her nails. The ends were pale as a nigger's palms. My mother had a brow like Ruth's, so high, it seemed she was going bald. Where have we seen pictures of cliffs like those at Gibraltar? My mother groaned when her nails broke and drank gelatin to strengthen them, then gin for her nerves. She powdered that high brow like a heroine who's Japanese and lacquered her long nails an orange red from cuticle to cutting edge, eclipsing the moons, but not quite hiding the dark line of dirt that was packed up under them like a crack in the sidewalk. My aunt used to manicure mine, forcing the skin back with a wooden stick, smoothing each end and buffing their surfaces until they shone. Blackbirds wear red badges on their shoulders like division patches. And my nails shine still, well tended, young. No thumb sucker's marks mar the thumb which hold my pen to its work. Though I smoke to calm my nerves, thus there are stains on the ball of it and between my fingers where the tube is wedged. Also, I often chew the barrel of my pen and I bite my knuckles, even the slack skin on the back of my hand sometimes, to express great tension and to quiet down. Her house coat, as unkept as her house, her hair wild as though regretting its grayness, my mother would sit on the edge of the sofa, sniffing a bit. She had a chronic cold then. And carefully apply another coat of lacquer to the nails she no longer filed, or drank gelatin to defend, her touch light as a fly, now that she'd moved her mouthfuls up into the morning, and steady against the gale that was constantly blowing through the bedroom and rushing down the stairwells to the basement, as though a falling river of wind ran through the house, I always thought. She had a chronic cold then, and kept a hanky hid in the ball of her fist while she painted her nails, so that when she fanned her fingers to admire their glow, the cloth fell more slowly than paper. And I always thought her hand in those moments had all the careless unconcern of a shitting bird. Moreover, she would often foot the fabric from her with the same indifference, or she would carry the cloth caught on a toe of her slipper into another room before scuffing its release. How does water float upon the soul when you drown? As for myself, I was with the First Army, and I, together with the rest of the boys, killed many Germans. We never saw them, of course. They were nicely out of face range. And Ruth's hands were, weren't they? Stubby. But a baby did no worse or better, except that a baby can get its entire fist in its mouth. I could inhale the whole of one of Martha's soft, spongy tits till she put on weight. It was like swallowing a balloon. And since Ruth was continually leaving me notes on gray paper like a spy, her fingers were streaked with such stains as come from overmuch writing. She suffered from what of the following? Gout, stone, colic, or consumption. And the poor thing thought it thrilling to embrace trees, walk barefoot through dewy grass, weave straw, tie granny knots in dyed cloth, and make bouquets of weeds. Her favorite food was milk. Also ice cream, sour cream mixed with cottage cheese, marshmallow, soft chocolate candy. All the notes she sent me were obscene. Her fingers played with my penis as though mine were the first one she had fondled, but I made a point of treating her as a psychopathic liar. Didn't I make up stories in my youth to live in? And didn't I swim through books too, the way I sank to the bottom of the YM pool, turning over slowly in a stream of seltzer bubbles like a tablet for the tummy? In the world of water, there was more air. In huge yellow glasses, she would reflect me as though mine were the first one she had seen, but I made a point of paying no attention to her. Just as I missed, carelessly overlooked, neglected to notice, failed to observe, where my mother hid her whiskey. Answer. In her handbag with the broken handle. Dressed as aspirin, cuticle corrective, gargle. Stuffed halfway down a dirty yellow sock, which was then sunk in a sea of laundry like a Spanish prize sent down by pirates. In mashed brown paper bag, saved frugally for trash. Among her sanitary napkins. Yes, she bled a lot. It proved convenient. In a flour tin, from which a fifth would emerge in a suit of plaster white dust like a rolling pin. Within a toilet tank, where the foil rusted and a half-empty pint would float, banging against the sides when you flushed, like a prisoner demanding his release. Stuck like a plant in a pot of baked clay more brittle than the bottle. Behind a brick in the basement wall, or stored up among the fruit jars like one of the years of plenty planned for one of the years of famine. In a drain trap, which took tools. In the gutters of the garage, which required a ladder. In the garbage can of galvanized iron where even a full quart could be safely laid to rest for a short time. Among stacks of wood cut up by tramps who were then rewarded with cool canned soup and soggy sandwiches. Between 2 pounds of butter on the third floor of the fridge. Disguised as maple syrup or an empty jar of mayonnaise wisely withheld along with the lids for who knew what. The gin as clear as air and purer than our water. Or under old magazines, flat as a cricket, behind books bought originally because they were full of photographs, tables, charts, and maps, in drawers with spools and buttons, old bridge tallies with gold cords, hand-colored pastel designs on the covers, and columns in India ink drawn up by my father, the numbers as precise as print. Then with admirable daring among the empties, like the unknown soldier, she would stand the vodka. Or they were sewn up in pillows embroidered by my gram before her stroke like bodies about to be slid to sea beneath the blessings of the flag. Or they were hung in curtains still as dust, concealed in the patterns of the wallpaper, the pulls of lamps, laid down like life is sometimes given up, in chests, in spreads, in tablecloths, in towels, in handkerchiefs, in ties, in rugs. Or I failed to see how my aunt had stacked our closets full of paper, lunch, and undies. Just as I took no note of the sticky, humid walls, the crabby furniture, the dirt, or how my father crippled himself with overwork as surely as if he'd fallen from a ladder, which is to say his greed killed him. He was laying up treasure to retire on, but beauty fadeth like a flower. The future does that. Even though I knew I must look like a banana through those yellow lenses flaring like sodium lamps. Did they enlarge me? I unkinked slowly like a flooding hose. I was a watcher in a world of windows, but I spent my time not seeing what I saw, as when, on Sunday drives, we drove past the pickaninnies or the gray shacks which sheltered the poles from the fall of the factory chimneys, and I sang hit songs in the back seat or ran like candidates for office the number of cola signs I could count against the number I could find selling beer. And Ruth, her small mouth in an O like a towel holder, Rue did the same thing, I'm sure, when, for instance, I lipsticked her lips. Oh, Master Hobbs, good Tom, my teacher, what delicious powers, what sweet will was willing me be sovereign when my phallus was the whole state. And she gazed at me through those narrow blue panes she wore to be swish, or the wide, round, rosy ones, such a collection of stained glass she had, more than Reims, more than Bruges, more than Angers, more than Chartres. At least more than the Third Street Episcopal Church, where she communed the Sunday she wasn't kneeling between my knees to sniff my dick like a dog and spaniel her spirit toward her deity through glaring chartreuse shades, the color of sick grass. Both paws already at my zipper with her wishes and her begs. Teach me. Tell me what to do. Teach me. Tell me what to take. A handsome young comer from Hellas believed he could bugger as well as the gentleman who now gave him the screw, which, if true, would lift him above all his fellas. Culp plays it Indian. He makes fire by rubbing together two sticks, his fingers cross in the shame sign. Shuzh, shuzh, shuzh. Smoke rises like a bandsaw. Yes, heat rises. Suns rise. And they do. Moons, too. What sound does the moon make when its pale face appears above a Greek sea in the late afternoon? Culp cannot communicate without rhyme. He is an authority on Buck Rogers. Tell you what to take? My dear dumpling, what would please you? The subject of the Sem this Sem is the Balkans. Excuse me, that's Bulgaria, Admiral Horthy, Madame Lupescu. Be happy to. From the fall of the Habsburgs to the rise of Marshal Tito, including the baking of Bellicon, with a short digression on the ferocity, the treachery of the Swedes. Who knows, Sandcastle? But you might consider whether fellatio, hand bangs, and ploesti interest you. Now, class, what other sounds does my colleague Culp make? He makes the sound of a stone falling in dry silence between the moist walls of an ancient well, a well dug to withstand sieges. See how carefully the stones were wedged in the walls by workmen down so far they finally sent the blind. He likes to say he's noisy as a moistened stamp. He makes sounds to show how the mind turns over. We had a well in my grandfather's house, and eventually an electric pump was put in the basement. Hitler's bunker had batteries. Grandfather tunneled his way to water like a prisoner of war. But in the end, the water soured. Beneath the ground, there are many rivers. Some are huge. Ants live in cities there. The mole moves in secret, and the worm. Culp formulates his laws in Limerick the way some people use the calculus. A few wasps and spiders make their homes in holes like the prairie dog does, the rattlesnake, bath water, and the rat. Culp grew up during the early days of radio, the way other people grew up through the depths of the Depression. He makes the sound of eyelids wrapping up like shades. Listen, he says, soft soap. We listen. Lights like ideas go snick in his head. Hopes abruptly unrubber. I should like to come like sap, that simply, the wet without the dream, the way perfume is released, or like the bubbler in the park. What's this, he wants to know. He is the burglar's tread. We listen. And this, I hear the chewing of a nail. I hear bladders collecting piss. I hear nerves gathering revolutionary strength like air raid sirens or a fear of heights. They build catch basins in the Algarve, too, and along the Costa del Sol. Portugal is a poor country. It has to beg. I've seen a stone wall flowered like a casket. Bees honeycomb in stone walls and in trees. Stone walls keep the cows out and can be cunningly made. Spiders sometimes burrow in dry ground like rabbits. The wind rushes like an ocean over Indiana. Swallows bore into an orange cliff, which perhaps floats ahead of its reflection in the sea. Do you know any doors which aren't traps? Answer me. The sun rises like the pennies we roasted when we were kids, or we placed them on the tracks to be flattened by trains. Why can't the sun come up a sliver some morning, like the moon? What's this? The ash of a paper match. My wife makes charts of her ancestry. I know many bodies worse than jails. Suppose a mad god in a fuss went round the world on a bus, and for each kiss he blew, he ran over two. What good would ensue? Please discuss. I like to pretend that the world is on its side, and that I'm climbing the street with my eyes as I would a steep wall. A tower. Here's one handhold. Careful. There's another. And indeed, at the end of the street, like a hat on a stick, is the sky, pale as milk, thin as hosiery. Yes, when the world's on edge, streets rise. And I'm carrying, coiled over my shoulder as I climb, a rope made of twisted limbs and bedsheets I shall use to descend by on the other side. You can tip a room that way, exchange ceiling and floor, and I've struck postures making love, as fat as I am, which did the same. Please, how did they accomplish these inversions? They manipulated contexts, reframed the vision, altered expectations, gave you a new perspective like a frog in a bottle or a pig in a furnace. They created sudden strangeness, made you a Martian. For example, tents, telescopes, towers, and the tops of mountains, travel. Some encircle you like the knothole, or slat your field of vision the way your fingers do when you peer between them, or web it more wonderfully than the spider, as when you make glued eyeway through the furs between your woman's legs. Make your citations more concrete. Well, age, for instance, illness, money, color, or a change of clothes. Chemicals, I suppose, dada, hidden mirrors, the coastline from the sea, or a riverbank from a raft, the right line of poetry. Skydiving, I imagine, alters your outlook remarkably. Head and handstands do, the loop of plane, and self-pretzelization. For example, Rue's face, as I glimpsed it, dimly through the drench of her hair, approaching me like the grill of an oncoming car. The sidewalks often burn my bare feet, and the air where it struck the hot streets wriggled as it rose like frying worms. Black tar bubbled between the joints of cement as though the earth underneath were a furnace, and we would scoop out a bit of the lava-like inside with a stick and chew it sagely when it cooled, like ball players their tobacco. I'm having a horrible time. Under her hair, behind her glasses, beneath her raincoat, chewed nails, sockless feet, scuffed shoes, bleached jeans. Then, just tell me what you want me to do, and I'll do it. I want to chew you up like celery, she writes, but really, she's a creature made of glass through which my prick will burn like a blue light, and with the same effect, passing like the palest shadow across her life. No more than a sperm stain on a towel. I bribe her with ice cream. I promise to bite her breasts. She insults me. You talk like a treaty. I do not. You talk like some book you've reviewed. I do not. She plays bitsy baby. The lengths she makes me go to are a measure of my need. It is absurd. She pretends to a passion for rocks, for ferns, for streams. I discover that she knows nothing about nature, comes from Gary, has lived most of her life amid smoke and steam. She thinks she'll become a convert to Catholicism and studies nunning the way I might donkey baseball. I compose several paradoxical epigrams for her on the subject of guilt and innocence. She loves the condition of innocence, which she happily confuses with ineptitude. She loves riddles, too, when she gets to pose them, but other puzzles frighten her, and she pushes my hands away. What do poppies in a meadow make you think of? Well, my subjugation was complete. Who could have been more unguarded than I? Did I not prance in the sun, play patty cake, beg and pursue, give comfort, and contrive to open my pants like the door of a pantry? Did I not give her, finally, some of my best spasms, risk my reputation, ruin a suit? The price you have to pay your slaves is everywhere on the rise. She liked to sit by my river and quietly watch the reflection of her glasses crinkle. She hated my seed on her hands, but she didn't mind mud. She would stick lumps of it on her nipples. Look at naughty Rue. She quotes Khalil Gibran in a dreamy voice and claims that if I'm not nice to her, she'll let herself be gang-buggered. Once I came for her in a paper cup, and she saved it till the bottom browned and yellowed. She was delighted. As brown as banana, as brown and as yellow, she chanted, wanting to fill it with flowers. But the existence of the cup embarrassed me, and I persuaded her to float it away as a gift to the river, its blooms like bored passengers staring down at the water. What do poppies in the field make you think of? Well, they make me think of Flanders, I said finally, and all the poor boys who fell there during the Great War, and of the poet who wrote, "You're nothing but a fat shit," she says. I smile. I realize that if I let her insult me, she'll let me feel her. Poppies in a meadow make me think a bleeding animal as large as a cloud has crossed it, she says, pleased with the idea. She claims to be afraid of God, but I don't believe her. I taught her to roll back my foreskin with her tongue, and when I would writhe, she would stop to ask me if it hurt, because she constantly confused my pleasure with her pain. I'm having a horrible time. She searched through her soul like a capuchin seeking fleas. Did I want to be born a boy? She asks. Is that my trouble? I see nothing sick about wanting to suck my cock, I am driven to shout. And I wonder if our leaders have troubles of the same kind. Occasions when the truth is driven out of them with a great oof, as Culp would put it, like a boot drives wind from the belly. And I used to get cramp in the middle of Martha, the ball of my right foot in as much pain as if I'd stepped on a nail. She worried a lot about herself, but I loved her miserable and mixed up, dependent and arrogant, sly and naive. I minded it not at all when her tears, snot, and saliva wet my privates. Ruth writes me that my penis is a purple tower. And I have to think that, no, only the end of my penis is ever purple. But nevertheless, yes, my penis is a purple tower. During exams, she would bite her fingers till they bled, blood streams crossing on her wrists like bangles. She wept by letting her nose run. Her laughter, on the other hand, was light, clear, sane, gay. It gave me a chill. Gee, if I told my daddy about you and me, about what we've just done, he'd shit his guts in a pail. I appreciate that answer. Thank you. We'll take a break, 5 minutes or so, and everybody gets some air. Right again. My students are in their places, waiting, like floats for a parade. But only I shall move. All other movement will be their illusion. I shall move less like a trapped rat, though, and more like a catboat tacking against the wind, my white shirt a sail bellied by my belly. I shall be measured, stately, and ensure that at least a modicum of attention is paid to me and my subject by saying, "I want you to write essays on this." Yes. "I want you to write essays on this, using only stamped official paper and keeping carefully to the ruled lines, substantiating your absurd views with footnotes citing unimpeachable authorities, Castro, Che, Mao, Marx, Mein Kampf, and placing your name in your own hand in blue or black ink at the top of each page, since there has been of late much cheating, much. Standards have gone down in a sea of deceit. Laziness, lassitude at least, laziness I believe, my God, yes, sheer sloth, I'm sure of it, has infected the student body like some venereal disease. Crabs, clap, scabies. Indolence never itches, does it? Idleness turns nobody's balls blue. Well, all quality has been quite lost. Ambition, pride, like dirty water down a drain. Everything's declined but costs. Yes. Thought, too. Thought, masterless, is now allowed to romp or ramble idly like a dog on walks and piss on any post, bush, tree it pleases. While passion, for its part, plays everywhere unheeding, as innocent of its danger as a toddler in a train yard. Even language has been emptied of its sense and burned like a building. While in its place, oh, your movies, let me tell you, put nothing together. These pale-faced photos, grasping them is like squeezing a handful of raisins. The coffee drunk during committee meetings comes in two kinds of containers, yes or no? Answer at once. Look, light is breaking on the floor like glass. Your wife is swimming in her flesh like soup. My spirits rise. They can. They do. How much of my life I have spent at long tables, talking, crushing out cigarettes as I would like to crush my colleagues' arguments, folding dittos into fans after doodling on their margins, and calling my activities, what? Education. Eloquence, so noble once, has been silenced by shouting, while the anger of the angry, deprived of dignity and shortly after that of any righteousness it might possess, runs naked and ugly through the streets. And no one will know Latin anymore. Speak up, class. What is the answer? The principles of historical inevitability are not applicable to Arkansas. Ah, the age is callous, the 50s flat as a plank, the past like a pirate makes us walk. And now the end is on us. The 60s see us drop. The 70s, will they swallow us like the sea? The 80s eat up any who remain. Well, time is tough. It doesn't care what it chews, nor shall I complain when my feet are wet by the water, and the worst the world has to offer climbs me like a slime, far faster than I age. As long as I can see you all bum up in brine ahead of me. For I, your teacher, yes, am callous, too. At dirty work an old hand, and I have seen better. Much. There was a day when the finest was not too fine to shake a sieve for, the highest not too high to mount an expedition peaked for flagging it, or lovely thing with love too lovely to labor toward. And I have seen it, seen such lovers, climbers, miners. I lived then, when we had stronger jaws and sounder teeth, when our culture wasn't something to be sucked on like a sugar tit or like a lolly licked. No, it struck us blows. Indeed it did. It gave us stripes. But now the worthwhile is the same jig as the easy. Excellence is thought as common as fingers. Most everyone has 10 of them. Our training is as broken down and rusty as our trains, in whose decaying and abandoned yards like cars, the good is being coupled with the cheap, the loud and violent with the profound, the lasting with the noisy flap and flutter of the knots. For what can you do with the present but live in it? A brief and trivial pastime. And I fancy not a single figure in the whole of history who is worthy of its mention kept his eyes so laced in his shoes when he walked as you students do. No, he looked before him and behind. He did not let the shallow present, like a tissue-covered box, tease him into being but a tinseled ribbon or a Christmas sticker on the tie. At home, you are the one who has to clean the toilet bowl, true or false. Look, light is littering the floor like trash. Your wife's vagina opens and then shuts like a night-blooming plant. Oh, so many yawning eyes. Can I continue? I turn my back, and their figures shut with a brave but puny snap like short books. Tempers. What? Rise. They can. They do. Those small assignments I'm asking for, well, I want them given to me Monday. I want them placed on my desk in neat piles. Every essay is to bear upon its cover a tinted plastic folder purchased for this purpose. Your name, my name, the name of this course, its number, place, and hour of meeting, day's date, and finally the title you've chosen for your little endeavor, since there has been of late much cheating. Much.